Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 9. Solitaire Rose Novelcast is where I, Corey Strode, take novels I've written and turn them into audiobooks before turning them into ebooks. And turning them into ebooks has turned into something that is a little more complicated than I thought. However, All In continues. All In is the story of Johnny Finch, his fiancée Dawn, and their friends in Ravensport, Illinois, what you need to know. Johnny Finch has taken the money that he saved by learning how to play poker through high school and college, and spent it all on a poker tournament where he was knocked out on the very first hand. He and his fiancée Dawn have come back to their hometown of Ravensport, Illinois, to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. Johnny's been unable to find a job. Dawn is heading to Minneapolis for an interview for what sounds like a dream job. One of Johnny's friends, James, works at a pizza place. He has a gun with him because he's scared that he's going to get robbed. And as we left off, there was a car idling outside the pizza place after it had been closed, and James was getting ready to take the money to the bank. Chapter 18. Dawn had left on Wednesday afternoon for Minneapolis, and the train trip would take most of the night, getting her there bright and early Thursday morning. She would have her interview that afternoon, then she would stay the night in a hotel, interview with more people the next morning, and jump on a late train Friday night to be back in town Saturday mid-morning. Johnny knew all this because she'd gone over it with him, repeatedly, as if she were talking to a small child explaining how Santa brought her a new Barbie townhouse and it was the best Christmas ever in the history of mankind. She'd never been on a train before, having always gone home to visit her parents via her car or Johnny's car. She told Johnny she would have to start taking the train all the time if she liked it, since taking the train was something romantic, charming, and a lot of other adjectives that Johnny smiled, nodded, and agreed with, and worried that she would get this job and want to move away from him. However, Johnny, being the best poker player he could be, didn't want to tip his hand and give her a tell that he might be worried about that. His job was to help her pack her things, drive her to the train station, wait there until the train showed up, give her a massive goodbye kiss and hug, make sure nothing happened to her apartment while she was gone, call her every night, and pick her up when she got back. And so he did. He drove her to the train station after a nice meal at a restaurant where they bring the food to you and they don't serve the drinks in paper cups. He listened as she talked about all the things she had learned about the treatment center she was interviewing at, and as she described all of the good work she might be able to be a part of, he fell in love with her all over again. It was easy to get distracted by the everyday. It was easy to forget that she was not just a pretty girl who put up with his odd habits. It was easy to forget that she had been there by his side, even though he had trouble showing his emotions, unless it would be to put a situation to his advantage. Mostly, it was just easy to let things become casual, worrying about little things and taking her for granted, when he should be thinking of her as a gift that fell in his lap, despite the fact that he didn't deserve someone like her. James was more charismatic, and he couldn't find someone who'd stayed with him. Kyle had trouble finding a man who would put up with him, even though he was a solid, stand-up guy. Rob had found someone, and Johnny hoped it was more than just a passing infatuation, because Rob deserved some happiness after the past few years. So in light of his realization, he took her to the small bookstore in town, so that she could pick up a few things to read on the train, and excused himself, saying he'd left something in the car. That way, when she got to the car, there was a bouquet of fresh flowers waiting for her. She was amazed when she got them, and took them with her on the train. When Johnny got home, he fell asleep wondering if he should have done more, or if he should have asked her not to go, since he was sure she was going to get the job, as sure as he was that he shouldn't have folded those kings that week before. He had to work the next day, and he couldn't keep his mind off the fact that Dawn was up in Minneapolis, and his future was in the hands of people he'd never met, probably never would meet. He got home late, having stayed to help shut down the store, grabbed a sandwich on the way, not wanting to bother to go through the refrigerator and see if any of the food in there was still edible. The house was quiet. By the lack of cars in the driveway, he figured everyone must be at work. He ate while watching the news, getting good and angry as he watched, and when he was done eating, he decided that either he could keep watching until he was shouting at the TV or take care of the bills. An hour later, the bills were all paid, and his bank account was just barely on the side of solvent. In the past, what he would have done was borrow around $100 from his poker account with a note to pay it back once everyone chipped in for the bills, but now the poker account was empty. He'd closed it when he took all the money out for the tournament, and used the extra $1,000 or so to pay for the trip, the hotel, the meals, and a special necklace for Dawn. He didn't have that buffer anymore. He looked at his balance and said quietly to an empty house, "I don't even have enough money to fill up my gas tank." He pulled out the logbook he kept when the guys paid their part of the bills and saw that Kyle had already paid. Rob was running a week or two behind, which was normal in the summer because more comic books came out than during the winter, so he would be short until school started up again. But James was behind. Way behind. Almost an entire year behind. He started to get mad at James, but it didn't take long before he was mad at himself for not paying attention to that kind of thing sooner. He was starting to add up how much it was when the phone in his room rang. He sprinted up the stairs and picked it up before it went to the answering machine. "Hello?" "Hey, you no-good Mark," said the voice on the other end. It was Dawn, and she sounded amazingly happy. He knew it had to be good news, since she only called him a poker name when she was very happy. "Everyone in Minnesota is tall. They're giants. I have found myself among a race of giants." "Did any of them step on you?" "No, but now I know why they always talk about Paul Bunyan up here. I think everyone is descended from him. Or that ox of his. I'm not sure." "They aren't all tall Nordic people, are they?" Johnny asked. "No, but everyone who's normal size is an import. I feel like a Japanese hybrid car in a parking lot filled with SUVs. They have a lot of people from all around the country here, which I don't understand," she said. "I do," he said. "It's the best treatment center in the United States." "Yeah," she said, "but from what I hear, the winters make Illinois look like the Caribbean. They told me the story of a blizzard on Halloween a few years ago where it snowed 3 feet, got down below zero, and the wind kicked up to 40 miles an hour, making the wind chill something like a bajillion below, and they shut down all the roads for 2 whole days. And they bragged about it."
"Bragged about it?" he said.
"Yes," she shouted, laughter in her voice. "One of the guys here said that he made it to work anyway, and he didn't even have to wear gloves that day since he was only out of his car for a half an hour. These people are insane."
"And you want the job, don't you?" he said.
"Yes," she said, "I want the job. It would just be an entry-level job, but it would pay double what I'm making down there. And they said that the turnover is so high I could be a senior skills worker within 2 years and have my own caseload and everything."
"Did they offer you the job yet?"
"No," she said quietly. "I have another interview tomorrow, this time with the lead supervisor and a couple of other people. They say it's a scary one since you're sitting across a table from 3 people. They have a list of questions they fire at you. It sounds more like a test than an interview. They have answers they are looking for, and..." She trailed off. Johnny waited a few seconds and said, "And what?"
"I'm sorry," she said sheepishly. "I know you aren't all that excited about this."
"What?" he said.
"I know you don't want to move and all," she said.
He sighed and said, "Can we please quit having this discussion? I said that if we have to move for you to get a job, we have to move for you to get a job. I can be an accountant anywhere."
"Are you just telling me that to be a good boyfriend?" she asked.
"Fiancé, and yes, yes I am. But it doesn't change the fact that I want you to succeed, and when you get this job, I'll deal with that then. It's like poker. You don't look at your cards until you have to act. I'm not going to think about moving to the land of the giants until I have to. Until then, I'm going to finish up my time at the bookstore, kick James's ass from here to Samoa, and count the minutes until you get home."
"You are not counting the minutes," she said.
"Am so," he said. "Prove it."
4,350, he looked at the clock, 54.
"You cheated," she said.
"I most certainly did not," he said. "I swear to you I am counting the minutes, and I can calculate them instantly if I ever lose track."
"I still think you're cheating," she said.
"Dawn, sweetheart, love of my life, apple of my eye, I don't need to cheat. I can calculate the odds of getting a flush after 3 cards in less than 5 seconds. Why would I be unable to figure out that each day has 1,440 minutes in it, and the rest is just gravy? Yet there you are in a house that would have to be fixed up to be condemned, working at a bookstore for a little over minimum wage," she said.
"And I was unable to get a job at Taco Mouth, so smarts aren't everything," he said.
"So why do you need to kick James's ass, other than, well, the obvious reason?" she asked.
"I've done the math, and he's a little over $2,000 behind on paying his share of the bills." $2,000? I should kick his ass. And I know Val wants to kick his ass. That could be my job, selling tickets to people to line up and kick James's ass. I think I could get at least 3 people a day to line up for that. Then I could charge people to watch, he said. Now that we're done with the witty banter, and we are done with the witty banter, she said, what are you going to do about it? I don't know, he said, biting his lip. I know he's had a lot of shit going on this year, but... But nothing, she interrupted. You know I love you, but one of your biggest problems is you let him walk all over you. He needs to pay his bills. When you move out, his other roommates aren't going to be able to carry him like you did. Besides, $2,000 is enough for... She stopped in the middle of the sentence. For us to move there, Johnny finished. Yeah, she said. You really want this, don't you? He asked. I do. I want this really bad, Johnny. The place is nice, the staff seem friendly. Well, friendly for a race of super freaks of nature, but friendly. So they're nice to the little people. Did they show you where they keep the special clothes and eating utensils for short people? Oh my God, she squealed. All the spoons here are huge. You know how we have 2 sizes of spoons? Those normal spoons and the big ones you use to get the food out of the pot? They only have the big spoons here. I ate in the cafeteria, and while I was eating the soup, I had flashbacks to my childhood, and not because I was sitting at a long table. The spoon was almost as big as my mouth. Well, he said, I do seem to remember that your mouth is pretty good with big things. You are a dirty, dirty man, and if I were there, I'd smack you upside the head, she said. But you aren't, so I could say whatever I want. Ass crack, cooter, thong, spiders, discombobulate. When I get home, I have a multitude of asses to kick. I just have to decide if I want to kick yours or James's first. Kick mine first. You may not be able to find James's. I may have to kill him and bury him in the backyard. Or, she said, you could just hide the body and all the crap in his room. By the time they find him, they'll have to use carbon dating to find out when he was killed. I could also hide him in the pile of magazines in the living room. Then maybe someone would throw him out when they finally do some cleaning. Cute, she said. Now what are you really going to do? I don't know, Johnny said. I haven't looked at my card yet. What time does he get home? I don't know, probably sometime after 2 in the morning. There was silence on the other end of the line, and then she spoke, serious in a way Johnny had only heard a few times. I know he's your friend, love, but he's playing you. He's using you, and you need to let him know he can't do it. It's a hell of a lot of money, Johnny. A hell of a lot of money. Now it was his turn to be silent. He thought a bit and finally said, I know. He knew it wasn't just the money. It was what the money could buy. Their future. I know you do, she said. This really sucks. I think that's what it means to be an adult, she says. How would you know? You're the one who needs a booster seat for your job interview, he laughed. They didn't talk about their worries anymore on the call. They didn't have to. They both knew, they both understood, and Johnny knew he had to do something, and it couldn't wait for tomorrow. That night he confronted James when he got home from work. He was so pissed at him he let him slip that he'd been told about James's gun. When he got to his room, he threw himself down on his bed and stared at the ceiling. He didn't remember when he went to sleep, but it was after he'd spent a lot of time worrying. He couldn't solve any of his problems, and they were all out of his hands. He couldn't control if Don would get the job. He couldn't control if James would come up with the money, and he couldn't control if he would ever find a job. It wasn't like poker, where he always felt like he was in control. He couldn't control the cards, but he could control how he played them. Life wasn't as easy as poker. Or was it? He woke up the next day to the sound of his phone ringing. He picked it up, coughed a couple times, and said, "Hello?" "Johnny, were you sleeping?" came Don's voice from the other end of the line. "Yes. Yes, I was, and I was dreaming about you, and not any incredibly beautiful actress who wanted to show me the whipped cream bikini she was wearing." "If my interview didn't go well, I'd be angry about that remark," she said. "I said I was dreaming of you," he said, starting to wake up more. He looked around the room and found a pair of jeans that looked partially clean. "Yes, but whipped cream bikini? That would start melting before it was even done being put on, and then I'd be all sticky and disgusting. You're a sick person." "Fine," he said. "Remember, I wasn't dreaming about you in the whipped cream bikini." "How about I just dream about you and biscotti?" he laughed, pulling a t-shirt over his head and getting out of bed. "You are a sick man," she said. "I regret ever telling you that story." "But that isn't why you called," he said. "No, I wanted to tell you that the interview went great. They gave me a huge packet of stuff to read on the train ride home. Apartment information, background forms to fill out,
she laughed. I have to go through a criminal background check. They may find out that I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
I thought I did that, he said.
I can't remember anymore. I guess we both have blood on our hands, she laughed. Anyway, a couple of the employees here are taking me down to the cities to eat before I get on the train.
The treatment center isn't in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, or both? How does that work, anyway?
I don't quite know, she said. Everyone here seems to think there's a huge difference between Minneapolis and St. Paul, almost to the point where people in Minneapolis complain about how far away St. Paul is. But even when I went through town, I couldn't tell where one started and the other ended.
So, he said, it is a land of giants who make no sense.
And tailgating. There's a lot of tailgating, whatever the hell that is, she said.
You know, hon, you're doing one of the worst jobs ever in trying to convince me that this is a place I want to live.
By this time, Johnny was downstairs. When he got to the kitchen, the phone was nestled between his shoulder and ear so that he could start work on breakfast. He didn't see anyone else up and around, which meant they were all either gone or still in bed. He glanced at the clock and saw it was past noon. Yet another day off he'd wasted sleeping.
I know, but you should know that all the women here are tall and blonde, she laughed.
I don't like women like that, he said, putting together a bowl of oatmeal and shoving it in the microwave, praying that the milk had not turned into cottage cheese. I like redheads. Short redheads with blue eyes.
Hey, she shouted, I have green eyes, you bastard.
I know, I had to compromise, he said.
You are an unmitigated shit, she said.
I am, aren't I, he said, looking at the refrigerator and finding that the milk was actually from the correct month.
But that's one of the reasons you love me. I'm a bad boy. Now all I need to do is forget how to shave for a few days, buy a motorcycle, and start drinking cheap whiskey, and you'll be unable to keep your hands off me.
I think the poker qualifies you as a bad boy, she said.
What if I don't play anymore? What if I start drinking and not shaving?
Ick, was her only response. They chatted a bit more before she had to get to lunch, and his oatmeal was done. When he got off the phone, he thought about the fact that she still saw him as a poker player. He didn't. Looking through the fridge, he saw that there wasn't enough food in there for any other meals. Remembering that he had about enough money for a bag of rice and maybe some salt, he fumed as he finished off his oatmeal. It was going to be a long day. Dawn called right before she got on the train that night, and Johnny had trouble sleeping after he got off the phone with her. She was still excited about the interview and thought she'd nailed it, but wouldn't hear back from them until at least Wednesday of the next week because they had to run a background check on her. Johnny laughed when she told him that, and joked about all the horrible things that had to be on her permanent record from grade school. After she got off the phone, Johnny lay there on the bed, ostensibly trying to get to sleep, but really he just lay there worrying. The worryings from the past few days were magnified, knowing that now he had a deadline for decisions to be made. They loomed heavy in his mind. Dawn would find out about her job next Wednesday. His last day of work was Sunday. The end of the month was 3 weeks away, and with it was the end of his lease, as it went from college year so that the owner could rent the house to new students when they moved back. He also thought about the fact that he'd sent out his resumes at the same time she did. He hadn't heard anything. Well, she probably had a job.
"Is anybody going to give me a damn job?" he said to the walls.
They didn't reply, and he wondered if maybe, just maybe, he should have paid a little more attention in class, or made an impression on one of his professors. When he went to the college to see if they could help him, not a single one of them remembered him, only believing he had been in his class when he got them to check their student rosters. When they said they couldn't help him, he knew it wasn't because they couldn't help him. All college professors suck at bluffing because they have no opportunity to practice a skill. They could help him, but they were choosing not to because he'd simply gone to class, done enough to get by, and then moved on with his life, rather than making human connections so that they would feel moved to help him. He dropped off into a half-sleep on the couch when he finished eating, still thinking about the mess he was in when the phone rang. He woke up with a start, and the first thing that crashed into his brain was that something bad had happened to Dawn. He was right about the something bad, but he got the person wrong. Chapter 19. Johnny sat in the emergency waiting room with Rob and Kyle, looking at the TV without actually watching it. It was a rerun of some talk show, and the host was making jokes that might have been funny 6 months previously, but half the time Johnny had no idea what the host was referring to. The waiting room was nearly empty, with only an elderly gentleman sitting at the other end of the room, dozing quietly in his chair. The room was pretty much a standard waiting room, with about 20 uncomfortable chairs, a television set, stacks of magazine that no one would be interested in reading if they weren't the only thing available, and a couple of kids' toys that probably kept toddlers interested because they involved building things. Kyle looked like he was sleeping in his chair, and Rob was reading a book he'd brought. They were all dressed poorly, with Rob in the shorts and t-shirt he normally slept in, Cal wearing what he'd worn to work and probably just grabbing it off the floor when Johnny yelled at everyone to get up. Johnny was wearing a pullover polo he normally wore at work and the same jeans he'd been wearing for the past 3 days, not really remembering that he'd spilled mustard on them at supper that night. He was incredibly self-conscious about the stain on his thigh, even though he knew that no one in the emergency room gave a damn about how he looked. Johnny kept looking over at a nurse's station, where there were two middle-aged women trying to stay awake. One was putting files away and keeping herself busy by doing the kind of things you do when you have no idea what to do, while the other one was doing data entry. The stack of papers she was working on looked as if it were almost 6 inches high, and Johnny watched as she typed information into the computer and then put the paper on a different pile that the other nurse would then file away. It looked as if they were creating their own assembly line, and Johnny, not for the first time, hoped that he wouldn't get a job that would make him feel like he were just some part of an endless chain of paperwork. As Johnny thought about it, a doctor came out of the door next to the nurse's station and looked around. "Is someone here for James?" "We are," Johnny said, a bit too loudly and a bit too fast. It made Kyle jump on his chair and get up, while Rob quietly put his bookmark in place and put his book down. The doctor came over and sat next to him. He was a younger guy, and Johnny thought that he couldn't have been more than 30, but was already starting to get gray in his hair. "Must be the kind of job that ages you fast," he thought. "We were able to stop the bleeding. That was the worst part of the wound, since it was in his leg. The bullet missed the bone, so there won't be any permanent damage, but it clipped an artery, which was what caused the amount of blood loss. If he hadn't had the phone in his hand to call emergency, it would have been a lot worse," the doctor said in a reassuring tone. "Can we see him?" Rob asked. "Not right now. The police are talking to him and getting a statement about the robbery. I'll have the nurse let you know when he can see people. We will be keeping him for observation, since he did lose a lot of blood, and we want to make sure that there aren't any complications." They all thanked the doctor and watched as he went off in another direction. When the doctor was gone, Kyle said, "I never thought hearing the phrase, 'James is talking to the police,' would be a relief. Normally, the phrase conjures up images of the show Cops. I don't know about you, but having seen James without a shirt, that's an episode I would go out of my way to avoid." None of them laughed, and Kyle said, "Just trying to lighten the mood." He kept saying he was worried he was going to get robbed. "I guess he knew what was coming," Rob said. "Makes me glad I didn't switch jobs with him. We're right downstairs with lights all around. There's always a manager when we close. I hadn't thought much about my safety." "That's right," Johnny said finally. "He has been saying for the last month or so he thought he was going to get robbed. I wonder how he knew." "He didn't know. He was just worried about it," Rob said, a confused look on his face. "Really?" Johnny asked. "He's been working there almost a year, and he only started talking about it a month ago." "It's because of those people he's been hanging out with lately," Kyle said. He looked around and made sure no one was listening before he said any more, and then whispered, "You know, drug guys. Probably heard about what they do to get money and got worried." "Worried," Johnny said. "That's one way of saying it." "What the hell are you saying?" Rob said, still confused. "I don't know yet," Johnny said, "but it's just weird. The whole story seems strange. He's closing up the store by himself and someone shows up as he's got the money ready to go to the bank, rips it off and shoots him. It doesn't seem real to me." "It's because stuff like that doesn't happen here," Kyle said. "It happens in big cities all the time, but here in Ravensport, the biggest crime we get is someone stealing a pie off a windowsill." They sat in silence for a bit, each lost in their own thoughts. Johnny went over the story in his mind. He'd got a call from the hospital that James had been brought in for a gunshot wound, and he'd been listed as the person to contact if there was an emergency. James's parents only lived a half hour's drive away, but for some reason he'd listed the house as his emergency contact. The nurse told him he'd been brought in as a robbery victim, and it looked serious. As he went over it in his mind, James's parents showed up. His dad looked like an older, chubbier version of James, and his mom was an attractive older woman with permed hair and a worried look on her face. They went right up to the desk and talked hurriedly with the nurse. They had to fill out what looked like an endless amount of paperwork before they were allowed to go in the door that the doctor had come out of. When they were in the back, Kyle said, "Now that they're here, we should head home." Rob nodded in agreement, and Johnny said, "All right, I've got work tomorrow, but someone should drop by to see him in the morning." They all looked at each other, no one saying anything. After an awkward silence, Johnny said, "Come on, guys. You're willing to get up at 3 a.m. to come down here, but no one's willing to wake up and be here in the morning?" "It's the whole waking up in the morning thing that I'm thinking is hard to do," Rob said. "Remind me not to count on either of you if I need a new kidney," Johnny said, standing up and grabbing his car keys out of his pocket. "At the rate you're going, it's a liver you'll need, not a kidney," Kyle said. and with friends like you, who can blame me for drinking, Johnny said. And that's part 9. There are 2 parts left to go. I finished the editing today, hopefully the final editing, so there will be 2 more parts, and then All In is over. After that will be a detective novel. So you can't say that the novel cast doesn't have a whole bunch of different genres. The first one was a zombie, the second one's a love story, the third one's a detective story. We're going to mix it up here. I want to thank everybody for listening. Novelcast has ads, like everything else in the Solitaire Rose Network, and here they are. Yes, here at Solitaire Rose Networks, we have ads. That's right, we have ads. Just like every other podcast. Come on, it's okay. Our first advertiser is our longest-running advertiser, and that's DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host all over the interwebs. You could go to other web hosts. You could go to the ones that have big ads on TV and everything, and they're not going to give you the service, the dependability, and the reliability of DreamHost. Head on over to DreamHost.com, use the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Another of our sponsors is Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club has great blades at low prices, and let's face it, you gotta shave. Head over to shaved.by/C19DC. Get you some blades. They're wonderful. I use them. I use all of our sponsors. Matter of fact, head on over to crazycomics.com. Over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see all of our sponsors. Bombas, Grays, Flaviar, Dollar Shave Club, and DreamHost. If you would like to advertise on any of the podcasts in the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. I will be appearing at a couple of conventions during the month of August. The first one is Blizzard World. Blizzard World Minneapolis on August 6th is being held at the 2872 26th Avenue South, Minneapolis, Minnesota, the MTS Charter School. It's a one-day show. You can get information by going to their Facebook page or by emailing bjornbrosdahl@gmail.com. Admission is $3 for kids 11 to 17, $4 for adults, and free if you get in a costume. If you go over to the Corey Strode YouTube page at YouTube/Corey Strode, you'll be able to see the live stream of it. And then comes LionCon. LionCon is the last Saturday of August, and that will be August 27th. We will be up in St. Cloud, Minnesota at the St. Cloud's River's Edge Convention Center. That's at 10 4th Avenue South, St. Cloud, Minnesota. I will be there from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and I will be live podcasting the entire time, once again on YouTube. I'm going to see how this works out. If you're in the area for either convention, stop by, tell me you listen to Novelcast, tell me you listen to Crazy Comics and Stories, tell me you listen to the Weekly News Update, tell me you listen to Solitaire Rose Radio. I do them all. We've got a whole bunch of podcasts coming up. I've got an interview next week with Liz Seraphim Berube, who is a comic artist and colorist for DC from the 60s through the 80s. I've got other interviews coming up in the month of August. Going to be finishing up this here novel in the month of August. We've got Crazy Comics and Stories with some special guests coming up. It's going to be a busy month. August is going to be busy, and you'll want to be there. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with the next part of All In. Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.